Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I am your host, Susan Laris and Danz, and today I am just so happy to be bringing on the program Danyon Brinkley. Now, Danyon, as I'm sure many of you know, is an internationally recognized New York Times best-selling author. And he is a wonderfully inspiring speaker who is known for having three of the most complete near-death experiences ever recorded. Danyon is the author of three international best-selling books, Saved by the Light, At Peace in the Light, and Secrets of the Light. And I know he has a book coming out this November, which we may want to talk to him about a little. I found it interesting that Saved by the Light is noted as one of the highest rated, or as the highest rated television movie of all time. And I have a feeling I saw it. I could swear that I remember seeing it years ago. Now, Danyon is much more than an author and an experiencer and a speaker. He beautifully expresses love and compassion for others in his day-to-day life. He has been a hospice volunteer for 33 years, and he has spent more than 26,000 hours at the bedsides of dying veterans. And I'm sure this has probably gone up even since it's been noted, but 375 people he has been with when they actually transitioned. Danyon co-founded the Twilight Brigade, Compassion in Action. And that organization has a goal that no veteran at the end of life will be alone. And I will tell you right at the outset, I am the daughter of a World War II veteran who died last year. And I was blessed to be at his bedside at that time. And we never really know when we're going to be called to be at the side of someone we love when they transition. So I have to say, it is really an honor and truly a blessing to welcome Danyon on the Frontier Beyond Fear, because quite honestly, he has been to that frontier and he lived to tell us about it more than once. So I would love to welcome Danyon on the line. Hello, Danyon.
Hi, Susan, and thank you to you, Susan, and to the Blog Talk Radio family for having me on today.
Well, it is such a delight to have you here, Danyon. And what makes you really such a special person is how you live the lessons that you learned through this remarkable journey. I mean, every day it's really clear that you are demonstrating those lessons heart to heart. And you know, right at the outset, I really want to note that because it's so very important.
But a lot of times, Susan, you have to realize I don't have a choice. if you grow up in the South where everybody goes to hell in South Carolina, and
yes,
you hear that your entire life, and then all of a sudden you discover that mostly everything you've ever been taught about religion is just not true, and that we are really spiritual beings, and you get struck by lightning, it goes down, the hits you in the side of the head, it goes down your spine, wells the nails of the heels of your shoes to the floor, throws you in the air, suspends you in the air, and slams you back down and bends the bed frame.
Yes.
Then dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. then 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. I had a lot of spare time dealing with the fact that we don't ever die. And
yes.
Even the thought of death becomes it becomes hilarious to me to think that somebody is going to die. It's never going to happen. And then the other thing that really comes into place is this so-called place that we have been taught called hell.
Yes.
And hell comes from the Greek word halos. You know, so when you go back to the Old Testament or even into the New Testament prior to 312 ACE, after the Common Era, or AD to a lot of us,
yeah.
And then you look at the translation from Greek into English, which you're now in the 900s, that word has become so abused and misused. If I didn't go to hell and I didn't die, that means almost everybody listening to this radio show today, it's not going to happen to them either. Because if anybody deserved to go to hell, it was me. So what has to happen is in our lives, we have to move from a fear-based reality of our actions to a spiritual-based reality of our actions, because a lot of times we have made mistakes in our lives, Susan, that we think they were horrendous, but it was something that you had planned to do to change course and direction. This whole concept of thinking that you didn't come in existence until someone pulled you from your mother's womb is a ludicrous concept. We are great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings. We have dignity, we have direction, and we have purpose. We chose to come to this world, and we were chosen to come to this world. And that's the deal. Once you frame your life into that concept, and you start looking at it from these points of where so many other NDEers or near-death experiences describe it, then you begin to see, and people have to realize that I went through three of these, struck by lightning, open-heart surgery, and brain surgery over a 22-year period. But let me tell you how really funny God is.
Uh-huh.
I was struck by lightning on September the 17th at 7:05 p.m. on a Wednesday at 1975 on a Wednesday afternoon during a thunderstorm. And I had brain surgery on September the 17th at 7:05 a.m. on a Wednesday morning during a thunderstorm in 1997. 22 years, 12 hours, to the minute.
That's amazing. There's a message in that for sure.
I can tell you what the message is. I used to say I believe in coincidences. I've never seen one.
Yes.
So probably Archangel Michael and Archangel Gabriel were hanging out at the Angel Bar doing cloud shots. And they said, listen, I got a good idea. Let's go kill Daniel. And let's give him a coincidence. And that's what happened.
Yes.
People
you know,
have to
Daniel,
understand.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I wanted to reflect on something, and because you know, I came from an evangelical background, Daniel. I'm the granddaughter of a minister, and
you evil person!
Yes, I am the deceived New Ager now. I'm afraid, although I actually have a loving family for the most part. Those who know what I'm up to in this community. But in any case, the hell part. I can't emphasize how important it is for those of us who grew up with that upbringing to work with this message of love, because I think that we really feel that we are going to hell for a good part of our lives, no matter how, no matter what our lives are like. You know, we fear for that, or we fear for loved ones, even if we think that we're not going. Maybe, you know, someone we love is, and it causes a lot of anguish. And I feel that your story, where more than once you experienced this love, and yet you also had a sense of responsibility, too. I mean, you had to deal with the things in your life that were unpleasant.
Called,
and that's worth talking about as well, for sure.
But it's also, I grew up with, but you know what, Susan? I grew up a tough guy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was a sports player, and I was a fist fighter. I mean, and
yes.
I served in the Marine Corps. Okay, during the Vietnam period, I served in the Marine Corps, and I worked for various government agencies because I had the mindset of destruction. So
yeah.
I wasn't searching for spirituality when I was struck by lightning. I was the furthest person from evangelical concepts. Okay, that's all nonsense. When somebody tried to tell me at 14 years old that I was guilty of what two people were doing in the desert 5,000 years ago, and it all started
mm-hmm.
with some woman talking to a snake.
Yes. Yeah.
And the snake was trying to get her, Eve, to get her boyfriend to eat an apple so he could realize he was naked. I just thought that was all really funny.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but when I came back from this near-death experience, I had two things that became to be monumental in my life. And this is what everybody is going to have to face sooner or later. You know, the Great Book of Judgment, the Hall of Records, the Akashic Records, all people will be judged and God will open the book or St. Peter will open the book. All these things that we hear about this. Well, I never went to hell in any of the three times.
Yeah.
But in the first one, and I think what literally everybody should take from the near-death experience, not all the stuff people say, but one thing, did they have a life review?
Yes.
Did they have a life review? Well, everybody who's listening today, you will come to a point when you lift out of your body and you acclimate to the world around you, and you'll realize it's just like watching this life on television. You're really not, you're in it, but not, you're observing it, but you're not of it.
Yeah.
And you'll move down the tunnel and you'll be met by all your friends and families and your pets. Anything you've ever loved or anything that's ever loved you will return. And then you will see your entire life pass before you in a 360-degree panorama. The first thing you will realize is how much about yourself you limited and blocked from your own focal point so that you could achieve the goal you were sent here to do. Then second, you will watch that life review from a second-person point of view as if you were your own best friend. And it's not that you ever made a wrong decision. It was how close you got to the right decision.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what you think was the worst mistake you ever made has changed your life to bring you to where you are. And I always repeat there's a song in the country and western music world called God Bless This Broken Road that brought you home to me.
Yeah.
And so we have to not look at everything as damnable. You have to look at it from the point of why you did it, not what you did.
Yeah.
And then you're literally going to become every person that you've ever encountered, and you will feel the direct result of your interaction between you and that person. This one point was the single most transformative thing for me through these three experiences. They were the most transformative because if you know how many people I'd hit in the face and how many people I'd beaten with boards and how many people I'd shot and how much damage. And I realized that I was just hitting me and I was really doing it to myself. And I had to feel that anguish and that pain and that degradation and humiliation that I'd caused so many people. I mean, it's shameful. And once I finished that, this is the second most important part. And people need to log on to this. I mean, I don't want to be too evangelical, but that whole idea of Jesus coming to save you in your last breath so that you can go to heaven, that would mean that this was not a fair and just universe. And it would also have to mean that the panoramic life review was not authentic. Well, I can tell you right now, that's insane. So the fourth part of the panoramic life review, and this is what everybody should remember. If God couldn't come today and God sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? Well, once I had this happen, the moment I could get up and walk after that 2 years, I became a hospice volunteer. Because if me and God had come today, if God couldn't come and God sent me, then as I go back and review my life again when my next time comes, I want to see the difference that God and I made. And what I decided to do was be at the bedside of those who were passing from this world to the next. I choose veterans because veterans in combat are put in certain situations where most other people aren't, and they have to endure things that most civilian people never understand. Everybody has some PTSD, but I decided that when I saw my life pass before me again, I wanted to be that person when I'm them, looking up in my smiling face, knowing that me and God are there to help them make the transition from this world to the next. And this has guided my life ever since it happened. And I have been reassured that in 1989 when I had open heart surgery, in 1997 when I had brain surgery, that this was the right thing to do because I have seen myself change. I've seen the transition in me and the sense of connectiveness to the divine. I know I'm no longer separated from what we call those heavenly realms, or the realms where the so-called people dying, I don't like that term, but in transition, because I cross back and forth between those realms all the time. There's no separation to me. But what I'd like to do is, knowing that everybody, please, if God couldn't come today and God sent you in the life you just reviewed, what difference did God, you and God make? That becomes the most significant point of your everyday thought pattern. Yeah. And once you put yourself that way, you change. Okay, now let's get to hell. When I didn't go to hell, I'm obsessive compulsive, Susan, so I'm obsessive compulsive, dead or alive. And if you kill
that's
me,
interesting.
And if you kill me, I'm going to get really interested in the subject matter. So when you take a look at hell, hell is mentioned 8 times in the Bible, and about 5, maybe 6 times, because you have to look at the old Hebrew translation, not the King James version of the translation, which is the basic English version that we use, and most of the English New Living Bible and all that stuff, because I write books for HarperCollins, who publishes the Bible. And that's who publishes my book, so I get a lot of chance. But if you go back to the old Hebrew text and you look at what hell was, there is not one of those places that you go that you're going to have your flesh torn and you're going to be tormented and live in Satan and sin and anguish and misery and depression. That doesn't exist. So what I had to do is, mostly when Jesus was talking about hell, he was talking about a trash dump outside of Gethsemane. And this is where they took all the criminals after they had either hung them or beheaded them or put them on a cross, and they would throw their bodies in this place to burn. Okay? And when you start to look at this and you look at hell, when did hell as a concept become a dominant part of our evangelical religious belief? It's easy. I think it was Clement II and around 1315 when Dante wrote the book The Inferno. Okay? And if you look at The Inferno and you read The Inferno and you look at all the papal bulls that came out in the 1300s, what Clement did, I think he came after Leo X, What Clement did was decide that Dante's definition of the inferno would now become hell. And now, from the 1300s to the 2013, the concept of what we call hell, it only existed since then, and it's only been immortalized based on Dante's Inferno. And if you've ever been in spirit form, you can't tear your flesh in spirit form. Nobody's depressed on the other side. That is the stupidest. I won't say that it's not bad, not very good. It's stupid to think that once you leave this body and you return home and you reconnect with all those people and things that you loved here, and you return to your true immortal self, that there is pain and suffering and even a place. And you know what, Susan, when you start looking at the Bible, you know, you start looking at it and who created all these concepts, most of this came about when the Edict of Nicaea in 321 and the Edict of Milan in 348, of when we had to take reincarnation out of the Bible, because until then, until 300, it was 312, it was there.
Yes,
325, it was there. And you start really, instead of listening what the preacher's doing, telling you what you've got to do to put money into play, you start really doing a historical study, and that's what I did. I went back and had to look at it because everything I'd ever been taught and everything I was supposed to believe couldn't have been true based on where I went. And by the time 13 years later, I had the second near-death experience, and I do an open-heart surgery, I became to truly quantify and realize that we have been taught to be afraid. Look at what the federal government is now doing using terrorism. They're destroying the Constitution.
Yes.
Based on we're supposed to be afraid of dying, and then afraid of dying comes to be whether we're prepared to go to heaven and hell, and what we are willing to give up in our human spiritual experience in order to avoid that has been played upon magnificently by our own government.
Yes, and you know, Daniel, I think there are a lot of people out there who are very focused on the end times as well, if you grew up in an evangelical background. And I know that you saw some pretty dramatic things. And something that I thought was interesting about your account is that you were told that these things could be changed through our actions, that it wasn't written in stone. And I wonder how you would reflect upon that, Daniel, upon how this end times theology has really gripped a lot of people right now with all the scenarios. I mean, I don't need to repeat it if you came from an evangelical background. You know, the Antichrist, the everything, the whole nine yards, the tribulation. I know there are many people fearing catastrophe. So where is the middle ground in all of this? Because the world isn't perfect, we know that. Where are we really headed?
Well, what happens is we wise up. All this information that's coming out about what the government's doing, and now the Pentagon has admitted that they have been lying. Okay, now think of this. The United States government, just take this for a point. The United States government is selling since last May, has sold $53 billion worth of treasury bills.
Yeah.
But they're telling everybody in the United States that they have not spent any money, that our total debt is $20 million away from the debt ceiling, and for the last 4 months, it stayed at the same number. Well, anybody in third grade knows that that's a lie. When
Absolutely.
You look at it's an absolute lie. Okay? So they can't admit that they've already overspent the federal ceiling and that we've already borrowed $4 trillion more dollars. So the so-called economic collapse, which I wrote about in Saved by the Light 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And I wrote about this all came from 1975, and we're there. Okay, when you look at the end times, if you look at where Syria is, this is called Greater Syria. And the funniest thing about it is that who we called Al-Qaeda and we were fighting in Iraq, and who we were looking for with bin Laden, when they moved from Iraq into Libya, we called them rebels. And they were the exact same people that we were fighting as our enemy. They now became rebels, and we were supporting them to overthrow Gaddafi. Those same people flying their Al-Qaeda black flag were flown by the United States and NATO to Syria.
Yes.
And what people have to stop right now and look at is our United States government and our president is supplying weapons to these same people to overthrow Assad. Along the way, no one is paying attention to that they are killing entire villages of Christians. They're beheading men, women, and children of the Christian faith in Syria. Is that ever reported? No. So as this begins to centralize, as this begins to form itself, the concepts and the scenarios of the end times are ever present.
Yeah.
They're ever present so that we make choices that are the right choices. We don't fund these civil wars. And I have a friend in the government who said that the only thing we want to do in Syria is fight to a standstill. Because if we let them win, then the large Christian communities in Lebanon and the large Christian communities in Syria would be devastated, and that these people who are just thugs, not under Islamic, they just use that term, would move against Israel. And if you stop to think about the end times concept, Israel is surrounded again all sides by its enemy. All sides. So for people who look at the end time scenario, there's a pretty good strong possibility that these end time scenarios are in play. But it's only about something that we spiritually are manifesting to create a very wondrous change in our reality. I always knew that by 2014 this would happen. I wrote about it in Saved by the Light. I reinforced it in At Peace in the Light. And then when I wrote Secrets of the Light, it was about how to look at life through seven principles. And in those seven principles, you could take anything that was going on in your life, and you could frame it based on one of those seven truths. And you would speed your conscious up so you could see where you were and spiritually how to think to get yourself out of it.
Yes.
I do not believe, Susan, I do not believe that we are supposed to be afraid. I mean, who in the world would want to miss the end of time? I wouldn't, and because it means the beginning of another time. But here's something in a conversation I had the other day. Someone was saying, well, where is the mark of, if it is the end times, then where is the mark of the beast? Well, we've all looked at the chip technology that's mandated in the new Affordable Health Care Act. And it's a section in there because of type 2 medical devices, which is a chip implant. I've been talking about that for 30 years, too. But
yes.
Think of this. And anybody can go check this out on their own. There says in the Revelation of John that you cannot buy, sell, or trade unless you wear the mark of the beast. You cannot buy, sell, or trade. Well, and it's 666. Well, if anybody's checked their credit rating lately, and there are three sets of credit ratings, and if you check your credit rating, based on that, buy, sell, or trade becomes you cannot get a job, you cannot rent an apartment, you can't turn on your electricity, you can't do anything without them checking your credit score. But what gets really interesting is the average mean number in all three of those credit scores of the difference between where you have good credit and bad credit, so that you have to negotiate or pay a higher rate, is 666.
Wow, that's so remarkable. It's like go ahead.
Anybody can go check that out. So whether the mark of the beast is coming or is already here, it's already here. But you got to remember, Susan, these are all suppositions. These are things that consciously, and I hate to think it, but there is a mindset of people, a group of people, that are implementing a controlled level, and they call them the elitist and the Bohemian Grove and the Council of 300 and the Catholic Church, that they all are creating a way that we become under a specific control to just be used, I mean, to be toyed with. I mean, once you create all these rules and regulations, think about this. This is really funny to me. This new Affordable Health Care Act, you have to go and put all your information. You have to go in and fill out all these questionnaires online. Now, think about all the computer theft that's going on in the world today. You have to put all your information into a government database.
Yeah.
And then that information, your health history, I was looking at all the questions, your income, your citizenship, how it can be tracked, like your Social Security number, how it can be tracked, where you live. And then all of a sudden, based on an exchange, which is where all your information is filed, it first goes to Homeland Security to make sure you're really a person. Then it goes to Health and Human Services. Then it goes to the IRS. So your entire history, in order to get health care for your parents, yourself, your children, and your grandchildren, you're going to have to give up every piece of information that there is on you, and you're going to have to feed that information to the federal government. And it is nothing but the plantation society. I do not believe America will fall for it. I do not.
Now, Daniel, I have a question for you in light of all of this. You know, I think that you've done something really important here, because so often I see a dichotomy in discussions of these topics. On the one hand, you'll see people who are very focused on all the fear, and on the other hand, you'll have people who are just focused on denial of some of the things going on. And where do we find this place, Daniel, where we see that these things, that many of these things are going on, and yet we believe in transformation? Where do we find the trust, even in every human being involved? Because that's what I begin to look at, is how do we begin to believe that they can be transformed, and that, yes, like you said earlier, this will be something that will transform the earth for good, while still acknowledging that some of this stuff is going on and you just can't deny it.
Well, what we have to do is quit living in 1950.
Yes.
We basically, in the American dream, we are a bankrupt nation. And when America loses its reserve currency status, which will be in the next 2 or 3 years, this will happen. It will happen. And when you realize it's going to happen, it means it's not 1950 anymore. We owe more money than we'll ever be able to pay, and we keep borrowing and spending. The president has, the federal government has borrowed more than $4 trillion.
Yes. Are you there?
And I was just thinking, in the course of that, over $4 trillion.
Yes.
And we're about to have to borrow another $2 trillion. So we will be $20 trillion in debt. We'll never pay that. So whatever the new, the so-called rise of the end times, it's within 3 years from us. And what happens to the dollar as a world currency, because now if you buy oil, you have to buy it in London, and you have to pay for it with dollars. Once that disappears, a new world is going to be born, and a new gold or silver or commodities like oil-based currencies going to come into existence. So if we start looking at the reality and quit waiting for the ball game to come on Monday night, and we start to open up our hearts again to the fact that we've lived in this illusion long enough, and you start talking to your neighbors. You know, we've isolated and cocooned ourselves. And where it is they keep driving this fear, but it's a fear that's 1,500 years old.
Yes. Daniel, do you feel...
So.
Yes. Do you feel that heaven on earth is miraculously possible? Because, you know, so many of us, we don't want to be in denial of these things. And like you say, we're waking up. And yet, what about, you know, a quantum leap or, you know, a real dramatic turnaround?
Well, I would prefer that didn't happen.
Really?
I mean, because,
that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I would prefer it didn't happen, because then we would not give ourselves credit for the transformation. Nobody got us here but us, Susan. And if we look at each other and we talk to each other sensibly, just like your radio show, look at the avenue you create for me. I'm a facts. I'm not woo-woo. I am facts-driven. My mindset is to consume data and to understand it and put it in a perspective based on how most people consciously see themselves.
Yeah.
But we have to quit living in this insanity. We have to quit hiding from the fact that we just want to buy us a boat or go fishing. We now have to become service-driven.
Yes.
Everybody, please, find you a cause. Mine is hospice, because I have no fear whatsoever of either pain or what you call transition or death. I have no fear. And in that place, I don't think I'm really afraid of anything. But in that place, I can sit quietly and give value to that person's life and help them find resolution. And most people, what a great hospice volunteer is someone who can listen.
Yes.
And this is what I am capable of doing. And so we all have to find something that when you wake up in the morning, it's not just to go to work. I get up in the morning because I have to go to work, and I have to work, and I'm right now working with a company that my job is, in my obsessive compulsive personality, I don't call it a disorder, but I can listen to enormous amounts of information, and I can coalesce it into what's appropriate and what's inappropriate, what to focus on and what not to focus on, and I can bring the company back into making it profitable or cut out or trim the fat.
Yes.
But this is what we all have to do. And everybody, there is no miraculous miracle, because either you have to have two train thoughts. Either everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle.
Yes.
And if you look at it from either one of those two sides, you still come to the same conclusion. I believe everything's a miracle.
Yes.
I believe that everything's a miracle. And people said, Daniel, what are you thankful for today? I said, air. I'm thankful for air today. As long as they keep, as long as the trees and keep making it, I'm going to keep breathing it. And so when you start to look in a lighthearted way of how you can be of service, and somebody asked me, said, what do you think you do? I said, clean your closet out and take those clothes, your clothes that you're not going to wear or that you think you're going to be able to get skinny enough to get back in. Then you need to take them down, and instead of putting them in a bin somewhere like the Salvation Army, take them down to an abuse shelter, take them down to an orphanage, take them down to a shelter and let people pick through them and find their own. And you will be amazed that by cleaning out your closet and personally going to get involved in the lives of people, and think of this, 2 out of every 5 children in the United States go to sleep hungry. It's wrong.
It's wrong. A society such as ours, that should not happen.
It is impossible. But yet it's happening. Why?
Yeah.
Because people are only thinking about themselves, and they're thinking about preservation. We've become I instead of we. And when you look at it from those points, Susan, then you just change. Everything that's happening externally began internally.
You know, Daniel, can I mention something about this? Is that something I've observed?
It's your radio show, Susan.
No, I'm enjoying listening to you. I'm giving you the opportunity to talk. But there's something that I've noticed in this economic downturn is that a lot of families who never experienced that kind of hardship are experiencing it. I see it in my neighborhood all the time, you know, pretty much a middle class for sure neighborhood, and, you know, people losing their homes, people suddenly having to go to food banks who never have before. And, you know, many of us have encountered some hardships, which it's really interesting, Daniel. It tends to give you an empathy that you never had before. It's like, you know, our society can be so callous. You watch what's on TV, you know, the latest new car. There are so many people in America right now who can't buy a new car, who are trying to keep whatever, you know, thing on wheels they have. And, you know, they really are struggling to pay the bills. And you know, it's got to be changing us, because I'm seeing more love for people, too. You know, there's something going on. It's magic in a way. I am an idealist. I will tell you that I'm an idealist. I do believe in some dramatic things. I can't let go of it, but I see this love that's emerging and understanding.
I'm an idealist too, but yeah. I mean, I'm like you. But
yeah.
I think gradual transition is the point that shows that we are the power. I don't need anybody to come do anything except be themselves and their spiritual self. And think of this, too. If you look at this economic downturn, it was planned. Anybody who stops long enough to look at it historically, it was planned.
Yeah.
It started with President Clinton. It empowered by Greenspan. It was driving to create through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to create, and then it became a bundled wrap mortgage security a financial instrument that banks would sell it to people, investors, so that they could make a profit, and at the same time they would go to the derivatives market and bet against the same package they just sold.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this was a planned, perpetrated collapse of the American economy. It was planned. And if you have any sense at all and you look at it, you see it was planned. And yes, it was planned for people to make money, and they would sell it to people who were in insurance, and sell it to pension funds, and sell it to unions, and sell it to Chinese, and sell it to the British and the French and the English, or the British and the English are the same. But they would sell it to all these groups of people and then go and bet it would fail.
Yes.
Now, this is what happened. But what's just like you said, Suze, it's just like you said, look what happened. In the course of that, we became empathetic.
Yes.
We started to look after each other and to care about each other, and people would share more, and people are checking on the elderly, and whereas normally you just ride by. Now you knock on the door and see if it's okay. This is the divine spiritual nature of us.
Yeah.
And what we're not realizing is in that divine spiritual nature, that's what we're looking for. The American economy the American people gave away the greatest industrial-based building country in the world. We gave away our industrial base so we could buy crap on credit.
Yes.
And that's what's happened to us. But look what it's doing.
Yes.
It's helping.
In the little things. Yes. Now, you know, I have another question. Yes,
I'm ready.
Caring. Yeah. And maybe within that is that transformation that, you know, to me it is a miracle in a way. I mean, you know, miracles do happen in a way. Look at how the Soviet Union collapsed. I mean, you saw that, and although I guess it's kind of resurrecting itself in its own way, but it's sometimes dramatic things do happen in this world, it seems. And, you know, you make me think, Daniel, and I think us old evangelicals, we're always looking for Jesus to come back in one way or another. You know, whether it's not that directly, but there's that concept. You know what I mean? That, you
so
know,
would
the,
Hebrews.
The dramatic delivery. Well, I'm not saying I'm looking for that specifically, but it's that dramatic, dramatic delivery of some kind. It's hard to let that go. I have a
it'll
hard
never
time.
Happen.
I have it.
Not going to happen. Because if you look at the Islam today, they're waiting on the 12th Iman.
Yes.
Okay, called the Madri. But if you look at it in the Shia tradition of the Quran, it says he's coming back with Jesus.
Yes.
I mean, it says it. The Islam believes that Jesus was a great prophet. I mean, all the way throughout the Quran, it's that Jesus is a great prophet. And that when the 12th Iman comes, the same as the return of Jesus, Jesus is going to come at side by side with the 12th Iman, the Madri. But
yeah.
Most people don't read that stuff, Susan. They just listen to what some lunatic is telling them. You know, they're listening to that. I happen to read that. You know, I happen like this. Think of this. Do you know where John the Baptist is?
What? What do you mean? Reincarnated or?
No. The body of John the Baptist.
Oh yes. Where?
It's in the Umayyad Mosque in downtown Damascus.
Interesting.
I have seen it. And it's held in a place of reverence because he baptized the prophet Jesus.
Uh-huh. See, that shows, look at the interplay that shows.
Yeah.
That we don't think it exists.
And that we're complete, and everybody knows this.
Yeah.
People know this. Do they tell it? No. Because then you would have peace. 70% of all weapons sold in the world in 2012 was sold by the United States.
70%. Daniel, do you believe, here's another kind of loaded question. I know we're really, you know, we're walking a really interesting line with this show in between paradigms because there's so many different approaches to this topic. And here's one for you. Do you believe this concept of globalism versus world unity, is it a threat or a positive thing? Because there are many people out there who are going to say globalism is a threat, whereas there are also many people who would say world unity in a peaceful, loving, higher consciousness way is a good thing. So where do you stand on that spectrum?
Well, globalization is an economic principle.
Yes.
Okay.
On certain levels, yes. Mm-hmm.
World unification is a spiritual. Okay, so let's look at globalization from two points. Globalization empowers developing companies. But look at the globalization of one industry. Let's say Walmart. Walmart has driven the mom-and-pop based of heartland of American business gone. Walmart's employees are subsidized by the federal government because of low wages. Most are on food stamps. You know, most of them draw more than 50% of the population of the United States depends on the federal government for subsistence. So when you look at globalization such as Walmart, it's really a government agency that's making more money. The president and CEO of Walmart makes more money in a day than an employee makes in a lifetime. So that part of globalization is insane. The other part of globalization is look at agri-conglomerates. They are creating like Monsanto and like DuPont. They are creating worldwide genetically modified food. And the small farmer in America who built his family, worked the farm, raised his children, had fresh food, fed the local community, now has to get his tomatoes from Chile.
Yeah.
So it is just one more way to control food. Food as a weapon. And this was created by Kissinger. Okay, it also came about when Joseph went to Egypt during the 7 years of famine. Food and water are the greatest weapons to control, because you can live without oil, but you cannot live without water. And so when you see globalization on the scale that we're watching it unfold, building power blocks, then what you have is you have just a sense of control, creating a plantation global society. You uplift such small villages in Africa, but you bring them into the system as workers as opposed to entrepreneurs. So for me, I buy local. I go to the farmer's market. I buy local. This is what we do. You know, we think small. Kat and I think small. I don't think I've ever bought but one thing in a Walmart. And if I can find a local business, I go there.
Yeah.
And this is the mindset that breaks their control. And we have to break that control. We buy cheap crap on credit made by somebody that we have never met, will never see, as opposed to buying stuff that we see, hi John, hi Mary, hi Sally, and see friends, and they grew it locally and made it locally. This is where the change is going to come. But I can promise you this, at the rate we're going, and with the rise of the production of oil and shale oil from fracking, I'll make this prediction. Within the next couple of years, Canada, the United States, and Mexico will become a trading bloc, just like what the European Union is trying to be. And I don't think that the European Union will hold together. What I'm asking people to do is to become of service. Find a way to be in your neighborhood, to be caring and conservative, Meals on Wheels, abuse hotline, you know, women's shelters, abuse children. Go and become present and help. Second, stay local. Know your neighborhood. I live in a community where I know all my neighbors. And why? They all don't like people to come see them, but I went and knocked on everybody's door. I just need to know you and who you are. And now when I see them, we wave and we talk and we'll stop on the sidewalks and we'll talk to each other, because we've become the cocoon. We've become so separate from each other that we're not united as a spiritual force. We're individuals struggling to maintain a certain presence of a mindset that went out of existence 1,000 years ago.
You know, Dan, and if we bind together, if we reach out to our neighbors like this, if there's a sense that you can feel when you look at the enormity of some of the things going on in the world, you can feel very helpless. And yet your message is one of empowerment, really, that we can be in control of our lives, and we can reach out one-on-one to people and get beyond it, it seems.
Look, there is no question. Look, we are great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings with dignity,
yes,
direction, and purpose. There is,
yes,
only one thing that can ever go wrong with a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being with dignity, direction, and purpose. They've allowed something to affect their dignity. Now,
yes,
whatever in your life, everybody, that you've allowed, where you think you're a sinner or whatever it is that you've conceived of that, that's allowed you to have your identity affected.
Yes.
Then that's the only issue. Because that is what causes you to lose your purpose and thereby losing your direction. Dignity, direction, and purpose. Whatever has affected your dignity, you must find it, you must balance it, and you must stay local. Because we are going to see an enormous change in the next 3 or 4 years. It will be enormous. And the illusion that we're living under of the 1950s and 60s concept will disappear, and a new world will begin. How much love and hope we have in our hearts and our minds, and how much we believe in our spiritual dignity, at that point will cause the rapid, not the overwhelming, but the rapid change in what we'll accept and what we won't accept.
Yes. Now, I will say, Danny, we've managed to talk. The show has gone by so fast because we're within about 3 minutes of the end of the live show. Now, it won't cut us off. It never does for the podcast, but I know we're scheduled for an hour. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you, because I have a meeting probably in 10 minutes.
Okay, well,
I was not going to miss your show, and I am so thankful. I'm so thankful to Blog Talk, and I'm so thankful to you, Susan, and everyone's listening for allowing me to take up some of their afternoon. And I want everybody to know that I love them with all my heart, and I believe in them, and I put them in my prayers every single night.
Yes. Well, thank you, Danyan, and thank you so much for being here. I feel like we've only brushed the surface of all the many things we could talk about, and I just want to let you know I'm very appreciative of you coming on here. I want to remind people that your website is danyan.com, and it's on the show page, so they can find that. And we look forward to your next book, which I hope to hear about at some point, maybe in the future.
Well, have me back. It's called 10 Things to Know Before You Go. And thank you for allowing me to what Catherine calls my enormous trove of worthless trivia. She says, you know, that's her way, because I seem to know, I know quite a bit about the stuff that I talk about. But I just am so appreciative.
Well, thank you, and you surely are a bastion of knowledge. My goodness, that was I really appreciate you coming on today. So, and I do look forward to talking to you again.
Well, have me again, and just get in touch with Kat and make it happen.
Okay. Well, you have a peaceful, wonderful rest of your day, Danyan. I do appreciate you being here.
And I hope I didn't bore everybody, but thank you for having me.
Oh, no, you didn't. It was really quite interesting. Interesting dichotomy. I think that it hit a really important area here, Danyan. So thank you very much, very much.
All right. Thank you, Susan, and be blessed.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye.
And I'm just going to end the show with a few show notes. First of all, thank you to all the listeners out there. I really appreciate the community around this show, and I know every show is a different experience. It's really interesting how this show is evolving, and one of the things that I think was really important about today's program is it voiced a number of things that you hear in a multitude of forums, and yet kind of brought it together where we can talk about it from different perspectives. And, you know, because I know there are people listening from many different points of view. And I encourage you to go to danyan.com and read about his journey and the messages of love that it conveys, because that really does come through, and the little things and how they matter. So I really wanted to point that out. Now, as we end the podcast, I wanted to note the next shows coming up. On Thursday, August 1st, we have visionary Debbie Griggs coming on at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. She's going to talk to us about her journey. On Friday, August 2nd, at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, spiritual teacher Jim Self is coming on. So we have a busy week today. And then on Saturday night, a really special treat. Saturday, August 3rd at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, Grammy Award winner Larry Sire is coming on the show. And he is quite a spiritual way shower. And we're going to have a combination of his music as well as talking about different spiritual concepts. Larry is actually quite an expert in A Course in Miracles, which we really haven't talked about on this show. So that'll be an interesting conversation as well. If you want to learn more about the Frontier Beyond Fear, visit www.frontierbeyondfear.com. And I always welcome those who are guided to support the show. This is a listener-supported broadcast. It really comes straight from the heart. And if you feel so guided to support the show, I welcome that very much. So with that said, I want to thank all of you for being here today. And actually, as we close out, this was actually supposed to open the show. We're in the midst of transition with themes. I'm actually going to play, what I hope will play anyway, the new intro theme or bumper music theme that Larry Sire so generously put together for the show. So I'm going to go ahead and play that to close out the show. And I want to wish you all peace on your journeys wherever this show finds you. Thank you again, everyone. ¶¶